high end over end variety. And Amani from his 45, he's got a lane. And he's got speed. Look out. Beep, beep. The Ducks are in the end zone. Touchdown.
This is the Duck Pod from the Register Guard Newsroom.
Gordon head to head for sure. Mitchell goes in motion. They hand it off.
Oregon sports beat writers Ryan Thorburn and Steve Mims.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Duck Pod. Ryan Thorburn here. Steve Mims is on assignment. We bring in Ken Woody for a second consecutive week by popular demand. Ken, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. Thanks for all those of you in the audience who voted for me.
You need to get on Twitter so we can get your digital audience growing on this podcast.
Okay, I'll look into that.
Yeah, I think if you stick to football opinions, you might not get in trouble. Before we look ahead to the week to come, let's look back quickly at the Colorado game. That's why I don't bet on college football. I thought that 21-point spread was ridiculous, and it was. It wasn't nearly enough as Oregon wins 45-3 over Colorado. A team that I still think has a pretty good offense, but it sure didn't show. Does that mean that Andy Avalos and his defense need a nickname?
Well, Brady Breeze is shopping around for one. And at my men's group last night, we started thinking of possible names, but none really bear up. So we'll keep working at it.
Yeah, I talked to Breeze after the Auburn game, and he... Because he's an Oregonian and he grew up, you know, he was probably a little kid. He probably wasn't even born for the 94 team, but his family history, obviously he knows all about it. And he could only come up with Gangrene 2. And he was disappointed because he thought because they lost their opener, they didn't deserve a nickname. But 5 games later, they're on a historic pace. Oregon has some great notes on that. You know, this is the first time they've kept their first three conference opponents to single digits under 10 points for the first time since 1933, and 5 consecutive opponents overall under 10 points since 58. And offenses have changed since then, so it's kind of quite a feat to keep any college football teams under 10 these days.
It is, and Colorado has a lot of talent. They still do. Montez absolutely wrecked the Ducks 4 years ago, but... he was not going to do it last Saturday. I think, you know, we talked about how much improvement teams make from week one to week two. With this defense, they have continually improved each week, and that's a testament to good coaching, but it also to the players that have really applied themselves. And you could tell they are very focused on tackling and being where they should be, and there's a lot of guys around the ball. They make... You know, a lot of times in sports, defensive teams are not fun. You know, everyone wants to score and so on, but Oregon's defense is fun to watch. They got a lot of personalities on there, a lot of energy, and they keep coming at you. And so I think it's a testament to what Avalos and the rest of the coaches have done. It's not just him alone, because they have other coaches, and they all, their position areas are doing really, really well. So my hat's off to them, and... that's why that spread, you know, we weren't sure they were going to be better than they were the week before, but they were. And 3 turnovers in the first half. One thing that I think got lost a little bit in the shuffle was that Colorado had terrible field position. They only once did they get the ball for a drive outside their own 25-yard line, and that was after a punt they got on their 42 late in the game. The Ducks, on the other hand, had better field position by 11 yards every drive. And, you know, over the period of a game where there's 10 possessions, that's 110 yards difference in what your special teams, great kickoff coverage, they're fun to watch. And the punter, Blake Mamone, he's gotten almost 49 yards per punt. So they're really doing a nice job, and that's really helping the defense.
Yeah, Oregon had 4 interceptions, but you know what's impressive about that is it's not just Troy Dye and Jordan Scott and Javon Holland that are the stars of this defense. Javon Holland goes down with an injury, and it's Verone McKinley, a backup freshman safety, who has 2 of the interceptions, gets a hand on a tip that Bryson Young intercepted. This defense has depth as well as some star power in the starting lineup.
They really do. And Cristobal said in his news conference yesterday that they give the younger guys as many reps as the older guys, and that's when that starts showing up. Verone McKinley looked like a rookie against Auburn. He was beaten on that last touchdown pass. But last Saturday, he looked every bit a veteran, and that's really, really helped them. I will also say that a thing that will help a defense out is that the offense not turn the ball over. Now, the Ducks did have three turnovers, but they were all deep in Colorado's end, so they didn't ever fumble on their side of the 40 or give up an interception, and that helps take pressure off your defense as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the offense a little bit. It appears to me that the last two games, when healthy, C.J. Verdell looks like he did last year, a better burst. I think he had 171 yards against Colorado. Do you see the running game also improving like the defense, or is it just the opponents they're playing?
I think in terms of opponents, the defense had a sterner test than the offense in the Colorado game. However, the backs just look like they're running faster, and as if they've been told, hey, you guys have been tentative, just, hey, you know, go fast, go at the hole, it'll be there, it is there. Offensive line did a nice job of blocking, but it wasn't like a couple of the games where we noticed at the pistol where there's a hole and you're going, is the back there yet? They were running with good quickness, and that really helped. But you kind of wonder how that's all going to hold up against a really good defense, and at least three of their next five opponents have really good defenses. So, and Seattle, we'll see. We'll see how they go against a physical team that can play good defense.
So how did you feel about Justin Herbert's performance? Because obviously the defense was the headliner, the running game was very productive, and he kind of just managed the game a little bit. I mean, there was a lot of NFL scouts there. You saw a couple of the throws that they're looking for. But overall, Justin, you know, as you mentioned, seemed to just manage it well, not turn it over, and got out of there with another home win.
Well, I was thrilled at the beginning of the first quarter. First drive, he throws seven passes, and they go 75 yards for a touchdown. He hit his first five passes. And you talk about explosion plays of 10 yards or more. The Ducks had eight of them in the first quarter, and there's been a game or two that they haven't had eight the entire game. So that was good. But then Justin cooled off, and he had 225 yards at halftime, and he ended up only getting 37 or so in the second half. So something happened there. I thought that he threw three balls into coverage, that he was lucky were not intercepted. He had four bad passes that were just misses, and then he had four or five drops too. Now, you put those in the positive side of the equation, and he has a great day. However, he did engineer some drives for touchdowns. You got to give the quarterback credit for that. I still think that he has yet to play his game of the season yet. Be nice to do it this Saturday, but he still has some way to go. What I have seen, pro scouts that I know say they question his accuracy, and particularly on long balls. Now, when he throws a deep post, he's really good at that, and I think it's because the pass is more of an online pass. You don't want to hang it up. Where he really needs some improvement is the deep ball down the sidelines, and for that reason, maybe that's why the Ducks don't call it. But I just a friend of mine was quoting Troy Aikman, who said that accuracy, you either have it or you don't, and I don't necessarily go for that. I think coaching can bring accuracy along a lot way. And you see that with young quarterbacks. They get better and better and better. So I think the coaches at Oregon kind of need to say, what have we done to enhance his accuracy here? Obviously, you got to call some in the games. But it just bugs me when I see other teams running their receivers on deep routes and Oregon not necessarily doing it. They like to run a wheel, which is a little bit easier pass to throw. But that's something that is absolutely should be in Oregon's arsenal and Herbert's repertoire.
Well, unfortunately for Justin, he has lost his security blanket this season. Jacob Breland, senior tight end, is out for the year with a left knee injury. he was leading the Ducks in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns. So, you know, it fortunately for them, it coincides with the three receivers coming back to the group they were already working with. But how do you make up for the loss of a player like Jacob Breeland, who was in the running for the Mackey Award as the nation's best tight end?
It was, and you know, the injury, when you look at it, he didn't get his leg hit, or it didn't look violent at all. It just, he went out of bounds. And that's tragic. He was having a great year, and really improved as a blocker. But they've got Kampmeyer, they have Webb, they have Herbert. That guy is an excellent receiver, and so I don't think Oregon's offense should back off at all. They got guys who can catch the ball and block. And somebody asked, well, would you go to four wide receivers? And Mario said that might inhibit some of the stuff they do in the running game. So I agree. I don't think it's at a point where you have to panic. Oh, well, now we're messed up. No, those guys behind them are good players who, the more reps they get, and they've got as many reps as Breeland has, so they ought to know what they're doing and so on. And frankly, the kinds of routes that the tight ends run, they're not real complex. They're rather easy. You got a seam, you got a corner, you got a flat, and a drag maybe. That four routes. You don't need to practice them a lot to be good at it. It's catching the ball, and I'm sure Herbert's been told, yeah, you look on this pass, you look for the open guy, and you do that. You don't sit there and go, the open actually, though, if it's his brother, maybe that would have him want to throw it all the more. But the point is, I don't see it as it's a sad thing, but it's not a devastating thing to the offense.
So Juwan Johnson is not a tight end, but he is 6'4", 231 pounds. He's a wide receiver. Can he do some things? Not necessarily playing tight end, but to fill that Breeland role in the middle.
Absolutely. You're looking for a big guy who can catch, who can work against safeties or linebackers, and he can do that. He can work against corners. So that's a very timely it's just a real nice time for him to come back and be at full speed. So and he's a physical, you know, the back shoulder pass that Breeland caught against Stanford, that's right up Juwan Johnson's alley. So I don't think that diminishes their weapons at all.
All right, well, let's take our first break, and then we'll talk about the Pac-12 a little bit.
Hi there, it's Les Schwab Tires. You know, we've been helping keep folks safe on the road around here since 1952. That's why you can save up to $152 on a set of four select light truck and SUV tires during our fall tire sale. So swing by or book an appointment at LesSchwab.com. Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952. Limited time offer while supplies last. Discount depends on tire size and type. Cannot be combined with other offers. Details at LesSchwab.com.
All right, Ken, we're back. Oregon getting ready to play Washington this week, but let's look around the rest of the Pac-12 a little bit before we look ahead to that game in Seattle. Oregon State hosted Utah last weekend, and it looks like the Beavers' victory at the Rose Bowl was a short-lived celebration as Utah pounds them into submission. It looks to me like Utah is the team to beat in the South and Oregon in the North. Would you agree with that?
I would. I would, just by where they are right now and how they played, both have been the most consistent. I think that SC can still have something to say about what's going to happen down there. And, you know, Arizona State is the South is a lot stronger this year than it has been, both in my mind and what I've seen. So in the Pac-12, in the North Division is not quite as tough as some people would have thought, with Washington, you know, which Washington's going to show up. The one that played against Stanford and, you know, was kind of dismal, and or the one that played SC very strongly and really whipped them in Seattle. So the North is not, well, and Washington State has fallen off a great deal too. And I think people were not really aware of the fact that Washington State had lost so many guys on defense, important guys. Right now, they're still scoring points, but you got to score points, but you got to keep the other guy from getting more than you do.
Yeah, Arizona State with a nice comeback win over Washington State. So The good news for the Pac-12 is they have four teams ranked. The bad news is two of those teams are going to lose this weekend. You have number 12 Oregon at number 25 Washington, which we'll get into. But also you have Arizona State ranked going at Utah ranked. How do you see that one shaping up in Salt Lake City?
I think that Arizona State is a definite underdog, but knowing the great job Herm Edwards is doing down there, I would not write Arizona State off. They've got a freshman quarterback who's making great plays. They've got a fabulous receiver, really good running back, and their team is starting to get the idea of playing more of a championship football. I've always thought of Arizona State as kind of a vacation team. You know, these guys, one day they're great, another day they seem a little bit distracted or off tempo, but Herm Edwards has got them headed in the right direction, and they can play defense. So anybody who can play defense can hang in there with Utah. Utah can score, but they don't always score, and for that reason I think they have a little bit of vulnerability. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know what the spread is, but I would give Arizona State a chance to win that game just simply because they're capable of playing really solid football in a physical way.
So this Thursday night we have UCLA coming off a bye at Stanford. What do you make of those two programs? Obviously, Chip Kelly's off to a brutal start with the Bruins, but Stanford, despite that loss to Oregon and their rough start, they're going to be winning eight games again, just like always, maybe nine.
When you mentioned UCLA was playing on Thursday, my first thought was, I wonder who's going to be playing on the baseball playoffs. UCLA has lost any attraction for me of being exciting or competitive, and maybe that's a reason why you shouldn't, you know, write them off. But Stanford is a tough team, and David Shaw, the head coach, is a very prideful man, and he passes that on to his team. And people need to realize that games sometimes it will come down and depend on more you want it and the more you're willing to do to get it, as opposed to the flash and dash talent you have. However, if UCLA executed like they did against Washington State, Stanford could be in big trouble, because I think UCLA, with the skill guys they have, if they hit on all cylinders, their quarterback, you know, plays well, and that's been their big problem. But let's just say they have a quarterback who plays well, very well. They could beat Stanford, because I don't think Stanford can score a lot of points.
Yeah, Stanford's top two quarterbacks are dealing with injuries right now, so that'll be probably an ugly watch down there at Stanford. Speaking of the Bay Area, Oregon State at Cal, I would expect Justin Wilcox to get another win towards another bowl bid this year. What do you make of the Beavers right now? You know, they beat, as I mentioned, UCLA at the Rose Bowl, but this rebuilding job seems never ending at this point.
Well, and that's a problem with football. You know, in basketball, you can have a team flat on its face and get a great shooter and another tall guy and be contenders. In football, it takes so long to rebound, to rebuild, actually to build, because there wasn't anything really to build upon at the end of last year's Civil War game. But it takes 3 years for you to do that. And they, for example, they have better players playing on defense now, but they're not as big and strong as they need to be. There aren't enough of them that needs to be. They've shown that if you get a great running back and receiver and quarterback, you can be interesting and competitive, and it would be a mistake to write off Oregon State. But I think in this case, Wilcox and their team are too well-centered that they will let this one get away from them.
So in the South, you have four teams that are 2-1 in Pac-12 play, Arizona State and Utah, who play, and then also Arizona and USC, who play at the Coliseum. Have you ever been on a staff where the coach was on the proverbial hot seat throughout the entire season, and what does that do to the team?
I have, and it was difficult. Now, if you have a good team at that time, that makes it better. But when I was at Washington State, Jim Walden had been, after he'd been there a couple years, there were some
Mississippi Gambler.
The Mississippi Gambler by way of Wyoming, Wyoming Cowboy. There were some people outside the program that wanted to get rid of him. And so the athletic director wanted to give him just like a one-year contract or something. It was a shaky deal. And Walden says, no, I'm not going to sign it. And so he didn't sign his contract. And we went through that season with our head coach not having a contract for the next year. Well, as it turns out, the Cougs were 8 wins, 2 losses and a tie, and went to the Holiday Bowl, first bowl game in 37 years. And at the end of the year, when the athletic director came around to renegotiate, Coach Walden stuck it to the administration. And as assistant coaches, we got 2-year contracts, which those are fairly common nowadays with assistants, particularly coordinators. But we all got two-year contracts, and so he gambled. He gambled and he won. We had a good team, so it didn't bother us so much that we were on the bubble contractually. But I think that it can get to you, and coaches can get uptight, which will affect the way that they coach, the way they speak around their players, and you know the players will maybe get after each other in a critical, judgmental way. And there are a lot of things that can upset the emotional stability of the team, and that's really what needs to happen. You got to do everything you can to make sure things are stable. And at Oregon State right now, for example, they don't have a lot of control over that.
So SC, you know, Clay Helton is what I was kind of getting out there. He's been on the hot seat all year. You know, this is a guy that, you know, won a Rose Bowl over Penn State, won a Pac-12 championship, but it just seems like with the talent they have, they're just not living up to those expectations year after year. A lot of that could be blamed on the dysfunction, you know, in the school in general, the athletic director position. But how do you see this playing out? Because they do have the talent to make a run for the South.
Well, they do. I haven't seen this year what I saw last year. Last year, a couple games separate, I see times on the sideline where there are players arguing with each other, and you can tell that they're at odds. And that's a problem with getting so many five-star athletes sometimes. These are guys that have had things pretty much their own way all their athletic career, and now all of a sudden they're in a place where maybe they're second team, and you're around. Once the program starts getting questioned or criticized publicly, you know, players listen to that, and pretty soon they can get into it. And the way that players are available to the media today, that, you know, a lot of the things that bother them were going to get in, and they, in the old days, they wouldn't. You know, what happens in the locker room stays in the locker room. It's like a couple years ago, the Ducks had fights in their locker room, and I never found that out until after the season. But once you heard about that, you go, oh, I can kind of see the disarray that resulted in the way that the team played. So USC, I think Helton, I don't think it matters what he does. I think there are enough people out to want to get him that they're going to get him. And the stability of his staff, they've gone through a couple offensive coordinators. One guy who stayed there just a couple weeks, I think. So there's some instability in that way, and that never helps you. So Arizona, they're like a baseball player. Like when McGuire could hit a home run, he could also strike out. What's he going to do today? That's the way SC is. They've got great-looking athletes, but they have hearts and minds just like everybody else. And I think sometimes the fact that they get so many great players, they don't have everything else structured or in place to make that work.
All right, let's take our last break, and then we'll look ahead to the big game in Seattle.
Hi, Ryan Thorburn here, sports reporter at the Register Guard. I've covered a lot of your favorite sports memories in recent years. Marcus Mariota being presented the Heisman Trophy in New York. Oregon blowing defending national champion Florida State off the field in the Rose Bowl. Sabrina Ionescu becoming the face of women's college basketball while helping transform the Ducks from Pac-12 afterthought to national powerhouse. No other media company covers Oregon athletics with the depth and quality found at DuckSports.com. But in order for the Register Guard to continue its rich history of local journalism, we need your support. Please subscribe and support our advertisers to help us chronicle the Ducks and take you behind the scenes to create more memories in the years to come.
All right, Ken, number 12 Oregon at number 25 Washington. First of all, what's it like to play in this game?
It's the most exciting thing that I was ever involved in. Being from Seattle, Roosevelt High School, not getting recruited by Jim Owens, who lived five blocks from us, that hurt. You know, I was all city. If they had encouraged me to walk on, I probably would have. But Oregon had a good journalism school, and I ended up coming down here. And, of course, I had some contempt for the Huskies just crossing the straight line. So, and back then, the Ducks had a lot of guys from Washington on the team. And they were all like me. They'd been overlooked or put down. And so when Washington week happened, whether it was Eugene, but even more so in Seattle, because you're getting to go home, it was so intense. I could hardly sleep all week. And I just love running out of the tunnel and hearing all the fans boo. It was just, you know, we had their attention and it was very exciting, and it will be that way Saturday. Washington kind of stands for the best. They've been the best team the longest in the Northwest. You have to give them that. The Ducks beat them 12 years in a row, but, you know, Washington has won a national championship. They've won more Rose Bowls, etc. So it's a bitter rivalry, you know. And the Oregon fans will see the Washington one, they come down to Eugene and go, God, I don't like those fans, they're bad. You should hear the Washington fans talk about Oregon fans. It's not pretty. And I just probably tell you one thing, that this guy who coached at Washington State and then at Washington, a line coach, told me that the week before they played Oregon one year, you know the little cakes they have in the urinals in the locker room? Well, the Huskies had ones that were shaped like ducks. And he said he was surprised that after the Oregon game, they stayed in. And so as far as I know, they're still in there. That tells you that Oregon has Washington's attention. So you better be ready. Back when I played, being on the kickoff team, first time, they were headhunters. That's what they called. And I actually learned a good skill, which is keep your head on a swivel. And that's even helped me as a defensive driver of my automobile. But the Huskies, they would come after you, and they wanted to punish you and try to intimidate you. And I think they still have that in their DNA. So Oregon has no reason to back down to them. Oregon's defense can stand up to those guys. And so it's going to be really interesting and fun to see how it plays out.
Marcus Arroyo gets criticized a lot on that Twitter machine I was telling you about for some of his play calling, but that overtime handoff to Verdell has to be one of the great calls in the history of this series, the overtime walk-off run. Everybody, including me in the stadium, thought it was going to be a pass. You have Justin Herbert. Where does that moment rank for some of the games you've seen between these two schools, that overtime walk-off winner by Verdell? And I'm sure that'll play a part into the Huskies' motivation this week.
Here's how I think that went down. The Huskies, it's 3rd and 6 and goal, and the Huskies are up by 3 points. It is a passing down. You cannot criticize the Husky defensive coordinator for calling a passing defense. They took one run defender out and got another pass defender in. As the Ducks broke the huddle, Cristobal comes out and calls timeout. And what I believe happened is that they had a pass called. They saw that the Huskies were loading up for the pass, and they said, let's cross them up. And they ran a running play, and there were two pancake blocks on the other side. And a lot of it, I believe, is Washington was really expecting a pass, and the run caught them. Hey, you know, whether it's Arroyo, Cristobal, both together, that was a great play call. And if he called it off to change it to that play, that was as strategic and timely a timeout as you could ever have. When Verdell went in, you know, we're not supposed to yell in the press box, and most of the time I can, you know, hang in there with that. But I raised my left hand in jubilation and just kept it there for about 3 minutes. That's how great it was for me. And watching all the students jumping up and down, it was just a beautiful, delicious moment, and it couldn't have happened against a better group of guys.
And what's interesting about last year and this year for me, and you can blame, I guess, Pac-12 parity on this, is Washington loses that heartbreaker to Oregon last year, but they still won the North, and they still won the Pac-12 championship game. Oregon is kind of in a similar spot where, you know, they're 3-0 in league. Washington's 2-2. So even if Washington wins this game, nothing changes as far as Oregon's path. But how does that strike you? I guess you want to win regardless of this game, but this isn't an all or nothing game for Oregon.
Right. I think that you'd have to say that Washington is the second best team in the North. You don't want to lose to them, so if there's a tie, they have the tiebreaker. That's the big incentive for me in this game, is that Oregon needs to win, because everyone right now is conceding, well, they got a two-game lead. If you got a two-game lead on a team you lost to and it ends up being tied, you're going to get you're going to go down the highway empty-handed. So in that way, this game is really important, I think, for the Ducks. And a lot of people are already kind of celebrating winning the North, but I'd just say not so fast, my friends.
How do you see this game playing out? Oregon opened as a slight favorite. I think it's up to close to a field goal, which means if it were on a neutral field, you know, Washington would be about even, and I don't know. I guess if it was on a neutral field, Oregon would be closer to a touchdown spread there. If it was at Austin, certainly they'd be favored by a lot more, but I don't know. Oregon has the better quarterback. They have the better defense. They have more experience, but there's some about Chris Peters, and I think it's going to be a really good game, and they obviously have the home field advantage. How do you see it playing out?
Well, he's a great game manager and coach. When you said favored by a field goal, I had to chuckle, because if it comes down to trying one, Cristobal doesn't seem to want to. So maybe it's even going in there. But what I would be concerned about, and I agree, I think Herbert's the better quarterback. Just keep him on an even keel and you'll be fine. Oregon's defense, I think, is better overall than Washington's, but Washington has a defensive coordinator who has the same reputation that Avalos has had, but for a lot longer.
Yes.
So, and you're playing at home. That's a big deal. The Ducks have had some big wins up there. But what I worry about is the wind and the rain. I coached at Washington 3 years, and I can remember warming up the field goal kickers before a game, and we were out by the 25-yard line, and the wind was going one way. We backed up 5 yards, and the wind was going the other way. So I also saw the Huskies, and I think it was 95 or so, lose a game in Seattle when their kicker on a chip shot field goal towards the end of the game missed it. The wind blew it wide of the goalpost. So my nightmare is that wind and rain will affect the kicking game. And everyone knows I've been critical of the Oregon coaching staff for not giving Camden Lewis more game, tries. He could have had two more against Colorado. I just know this, that when you go out there, you want to go out there knowing you're going to make it, not hoping that you can make it. And I think the coaches have to understand, what are we doing or not doing that can lead to that frame of mind for the kicker. What Camden Lewis has in his head is every bit as important as what's in Justin Herbert's head. And the thing about Camden Lewis is that, let's say it gets into overtime, now you have the Ducks, who don't run the option in a 25-yard period amount of ground to cover, and with a field goal kicker that the head coach seems afraid to put in there. That's not good, and I wish it had changed.
Well, I think my head says Oregon wins this game, but my gut says that Washington probably squeaks out a close one.
Well, it could happen. I think that if the shoulds should prevail, Oregon should win. They should win. They have more good season players than the Huskies. Huskies are young, particularly in defense. So there's some things there, but it comes down to execution. If the field position game is as good as it was the last two games, and it has been nearly all season, that'll help negate some of the energy and atmosphere of Husky Stadium. Herbert making good decisions. And the thing is, just don't be afraid to let him go. That first drive against Colorado was, people were going, oh, wow, whoever's calling these plays, keep doing it. Because he got them going, and they scored their first drive. He hit his first five passes. At halftime, he had 225 yards passing. He's on his way to 400 yards. So what happened in the second half? Well, he lost a little of his precision, and when next time you get a chance to interview him, you could ask him why did that fall off in the second half? Because he had some bad passes, and he had some coverage issues, and his receivers dropped some. I'm going, wow, maybe Oregon has too many receivers now, and there's so many that they can't concentrate. I don't know. Maybe it's just a one time in a thousand things, but we'll see. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be a really tough game. I want Oregon to win. I think they can, but I'm not sure they will.
All right. Well, we'll find out. The good news for Ducks fans is I'm not good at picking games. So maybe Oregon wins in a rout, and we can put that coverage to bed early. It's a 12:30 p.m. kickoff, which we all like, on ABC. And we'll have complete coverage leading into that game and out of that game at ducksports.com, where you can also find Ken Woody's analysis of all things Oregon football. So we appreciate that. So check that out as well. And thanks for tuning in.